We are talking today with Green Party presidential candidate David Cobb. David, thank you for coming in today.
It's a real pleasure to be here.
If you could start out and give us a brief bio of yourself.
Well, I grew up in a small shrimping village in San Leon, Texas. I'm the only presidential candidate who grew up in a house without a flush toilet. I say that to let you know that I actually grew up in poverty. I'm a working class person. Unlike all the other folks running for president this year, I ain't no millionaire. I'm an ordinary person who's rolled up my sleeves to take our country back from the corporate fat cats who've hijacked it. I put myself through school, washing dishes, waiting on tables, working construction jobs. I got through undergraduate school at the top of my class, went on to law school, where I worked in the public interest law sector, was on the law review, top of my class, went on to practice law for several years, worked as a public interest attorney, the Community Environmental Legal Defense Fund, have been a Green Party organizer for about almost a decade, have been a social justice activist for more than that, have basically dedicated myself to trying to help build a movement for peace, justice, and democracy in this country.
And tell me about what about the Green Party attracted you to it?
Well, you know, I worked on Jesse Jackson's campaign seeking the Democratic Party's nomination back in 84 and 88, Jerry Brown's campaign in 92, and I quit the Democratic Party in utter disgust because I realized that corporate money had utterly hijacked that party. And all the energy and enthusiasm and excitement that happens during progressive campaigns ultimately just dissipates and evaporates after it's over with. And I was attracted to the Green Party because it was a political party that was upfront and explicit about its refusal to solicit or accept corporate contributions. The Green Party is explicit in their values of peace, justice, environmental protection, real democracy, racial justice, and racial fairness. There's an unflinching progressive agenda that has short, mid, and long-term goals to actually succeed, to actually win, and by win I mean literally fundamentally transforming our culture, our society, and our government. I'm excited to be in the Green Party because it's the place where real social change is happening.
So let's talk about some of the issues you see as key to focus on. What issues do you see that you would do something different?
Well, first and foremost in this election cycle is the war in Iraq. As a presidential candidate, I am the candidate saying, end the war now and bring the troops home. It's simple. It's easy to do if there was only the political will to do it. And, of course, both John Kerry and George Bush are now arguing over who will kill more people and who will fight the Iraq war better. And nobody is describing it as it properly should be described, as a mistake, as an illegitimate, immoral, and illegal operation. And, you know, Mike, let me be clear. If I were elected president on November 2nd, on November 3rd, I would issue a public apology to the people of Iraq for the reckless, immoral war that the Bush-Cheney administration launched. Second step, I would immediately rescind every one of the corporate crony contracts that had been issued to Halliburton Corporation, Bechtel Corporation, and the rest of the Bush-Cheney buddies. Step three, I would make that money, $100 billion or so, that's earmarked to go to Halliburton, Bechtel, and others, earmark it and change it and send it to the Iraqi people and call it what it should properly be called under international law, reparations. Step four, ask the United Nations to convene an international summit comprised of folks throughout the world, the Arabic world, in order to ensure that the Iraqi civil society could meet together and bring in also leadership from the Arabic world, allow them to know that the United States government is pulling out of Iraq, and if there is any need for a peacekeeping force, give the United Nations and the Arabic world plenty of time, if the Iraqi people want one, to make sure that that peacekeeping force could come from soldiers from the Arabic world who speak Arabic, so that we could de-escalate this clash of civilizations that Bush Cheney have gotten us into. You know, that's a five-step program that would get the troops out and put us on the direction to real global security and real peace. And it's something that neither John Kerry or George Bush are saying.
All right, what do you see as the next key issue?
Well, intimately tied to the war in Iraq, of course, is our addiction to oil. This is addiction to oil is driving not just the war in Iraq and in the Middle East and watch out for Plan Colombia and Venezuela. But, of course, our addiction to oil is also driving global warming and environmental destruction. So the next step, or the next intimately prominent issue, is moving to sustainable alternative energy sources, wean ourselves off of this addiction. And let's remember that oil is a finite resource. It is going to run out. And the peak oil, that is, the moment at which the entire world is able to produce less oil than it did yesterday, is coming. It's looming. There's no doubt about it. Even the geophysicists are acknowledging that they don't expect to discover much new oil, certainly not vast reservoirs. So we need to start developing solar power, wind power, geothermal power. We also need to be developing intrastate mass transit systems based on the train systems the way they do in Europe. This is a way that we could connect ourselves better. We could improve our transportation across the state, employ literally hundreds of thousands of folks in creating this infrastructure that would actually be serving human needs. We should also be creating mass transit system inner city, trolley systems. And let's remember that almost every major city in this country once had a viable trolley system, and those trolley systems were literally destroyed and the tracks ripped up by General Motors and Firestone, who conspired to literally destroy the mass transit systems of this country. Another example, Mike, of how corporations have literally hijacked not only our government, but our entire society. Corporations today are not just exercising power, they are ruling us. They are acting as illegitimate, unelected rulers in this country, and the Green Party is telling the truth about that and urging people to join with us, vote for the Green Party, get involved in the Green Party, so we can take our country back.
Well, that seems to be one of the major hurdles here, if there's going to be any change in this country, is dealing with corporations. How would you do that?
Well, let's remember that the corporation is just a business entity. It is profoundly and deeply a mistake for a corporation to be considered a person under law. The illegitimate doctrine of corporate personhood is a 100-year-old doctrine that basically enshrines and protects the property rights of the wealthy elite. I would overturn the corporate personhood doctrine. You know, and that's not just a legal notion. When a corporation is considered a person under law, it means that they have constitutional rights, which allows them to go into courts and overturn democratically enacted laws at the local, state, and federal level that attempt to control their conduct or prevent their harm and abuse. Mike, remember that currently most corporate harm and abuse and environmental destruction is actually legal. That's how profane and incredibly stupid our legal system is. So one important step is to overturn that doctrine. Corporate personhood is an insult and a perversion of the idea of democracy. The second thing, and intimately tied to it, is to move towards publicly funded elections to get this big corporate money and the wealthy elite out of our elections so that we, the people, can actually have democratic elections and find out how we're doing and or what that would mean. You know, we really have to grapple with the fact that in this country, corporations are beyond just places where we go and do work. Corporations have become tyrannical institutions. They are really tyrants, basically dictating our lives, our healthcare choices, our educational institutions, our transportation, how much we're going to be paid, what kind of food we eat. I mean, we the people are not self-governing people in this country. We the people have been reduced to consumers or workers, but not actually empowered citizens. So the way to deal with it is to describe accurately and honestly the corporate takeover of our government, and secondly, to design a plan to do something about it. And Mike, that's why I'm urging people, join the Green Party and vote for Green Party candidates, because we are the only political party that has a plan to deal with the corporate takeover of our government. The reality is Democrats and Republicans alike are completely beholden to corporate special interest money in order to finance their campaigns. That's why there is ultimately no difference in their day-to-day policies on the matter of corporate control.
Do you see challenging or modifying corporate charters as one of the potential solutions?
Absolutely, Mike, and thanks for asking about that. I've actually been involved with a group called the Program on Corporations Law and Democracy. It's POCLAD.org, and that's nationally. I've also worked with a local group called Democracy Unlimited of Humboldt County in Northern California. We're available online at www.duhc.org. .org stands for Democracy Unlimited of Humboldt County. And we outline ways to specifically go about revoking corporate charters. Remember that state governments issue charters that we are capable of, if there was only political will, revoking corporate charters of corporations that have a history of violating health, safety, or environmental laws. In fact, in this country, corporate charters were once routinely revoked. However, there's not the political will at this stage to do so. When I ran for Attorney General of the state of Texas as a Green Party candidate, I made corporate charter revocation the signature issue and actually put it on the political radar screen, and it's starting to happen. And Mike, the very fact that you as an interviewer are asking the question is an example of two things. One, that we're on community radio where there's not corporate control of what we're allowed to say or think. And two, you are educated about the issue and that you're educating your listeners about it. And to me, that's an example of this reality. There is a movement. There is a movement in this country that realizes what we're up against in terms of corporate globalization, in terms of the corporate takeover of our domestic government, and there is a movement of genuine resistance. And I'm urging people to think about the Green Party as the electoral arm of the movement of resistance. You know, we've got short, mid, and long-term goals in order to take our country back, and we're going to need the help of folks here in Seattle to do it. So join the Green Party as members, participate in your local Green Party, and vote for Green Party candidates up and down the ballot as a measure of the growing strength of this movement for peace, justice, and real democracy.
Explain to me why people would want to, let's say, join an organization like the Green Party, in this country a relatively new party, versus I heard Michael Moore propose years ago, instead of doing that, joining a third party, everyone going towards into the Democratic Party. If everyone that was at these different events that he went to went into the Democratic Party and took back the Democratic Party, or at least, you know, steered it towards the same values that the Greens propose, his idea is, in a lot of ways, that might be easier, that might take less energy overall than totally creating a new party from scratch.
Well, I appreciate that as a suggestion, but many of us in the Green Party have already tried that and have realized that the corporate contributions are like a cancer that have literally mastitized within the body of the Democratic Party. It simply can't be done. Look at all the progressives who are already actively working within the Democratic Party, and it's not working. And it can't work. You know, you could take over the local, the state, and even the National Democratic Party, but because the candidacies and the primary systems are still completely money-driven, it wouldn't matter. You'd have the office, you know, you'd get the letterhead, but the candidates would still be beholden to the same corporate money. The corporate money would still drive the whole system. And I think there's also a real misconception that I hate to break up, but the Democratic Party has never been an actual progressive party. You know, the Democratic Party was actually created as the party of slavery and the party to defend slavery. Throughout its entire time has been the party representing the wealthy elites. That brief shining moment that people think about what the real Democratic Party was actually driven by alternative parties that were pushing issues that the Democrats were forced to co-opt, not because the leadership wanted to, but because ultimately they had to. You know, Mike, the Democratic Party fought against the creation of the Social Security Administration. The Democratic Party initially fought against unemployment insurance. The Democratic Party initially fought against the 40-hour work week. The Democratic Party leadership fought against ending child labor. The Democratic Party fought against pure food and drug laws. You know, all of these things that people associate as progressive, positive things were actually proposed by alternative parties because the establishment parties fought against them. That's always the case. You know, Mike, they're called the establishment parties for a reason. They exist to promote and protect the interest of the establishment. If you think that the system basically works and you just want to tinker at the margins, then it's possible to do that within the Democratic Party. But if you think that this social, political, and economic system is fundamentally flawed, and if you believe, as I do, that this system is literally destroying the planet, if you believe, as I do, that in the destruction of the planet, we are creating a racist, sexist, class-oppressive world order with the plunder, then you can't really make the solution happen within the Democratic Party. We've got to have the courage and the vision that people before us did, create our own political party, have short, mid, and long-term goals, and a vision for transformation and systemic change. And that's what the Green Party represents, and that's why I continue to urge the listeners of KEXP to get involved in the Green Party. You know, I want to say this, Mike. If you want systemic change and all you ever do is vote, you're really wasting your time, because systemic change is not going to come by voting alone. However, if you want systemic change and you don't bother to vote and refuse to vote, even for candidates like me that's calling for systemic change, then you're really wasting an opportunity. And the third part is, if you want systemic change in this country and you vote for candidates like George Bush and John Kerry, who are actively opposed to systemic change, then you're really working against your own stated goals. So I'm trying to encourage people, get involved in the only political party that is advocating for ending the war in Iraq, moving to sustainable energy, demanding single-payer universal health care, raising the minimum wage to a living wage, actually helping to create real democracy and challenging the corporate takeover of our government. You know, join the only political party calling for systemic change.
All right, jumping back to issues, what do you see as a proposed solution for our health care ills?
Mike, that's easy. Single-payer universal health care. It is the only way to actually ensure that health care be available to all, not only American citizens, but all people who live here. The reality is that currently pharmaceutical corporations and insurance corporations have completely and utterly hijacked the healthcare system in this country, and they're dictating healthcare. We got 40 to 50 million Americans without access to affordable healthcare, and I'm one of them, you know? And I can tell you're one of them too, right?
I am.
You know, so, and I bet a lot of the listeners of KEXP are also in this boat. So, you know, the Green Party actually has a plan to make sure that Mike and David Cobb and you actually get health care, and that is single-payer universal health care. It's a system that would allow all of us to actually choose our own doctors and free up doctors to actually practice medicine without the insurance corporations and HMOs getting involved and saying what can or can't be done for profit. And then the payment would all go through the federal government. This is a system, by the way, that's already in use right now in this country. It's called Medicare. It's called Medicaid. You know, the reality is that people over 65 already enjoy this. And Mike, when's the last time you heard an angry group of 65-year-olds marching in the streets demanding that they privatize their health care? I mean, it's almost absurd to even say it, right? And in Canada, in all of the industrialized world, they already have single-payer universal health care. And it's amazing to me that the argument is, well, there are lines, it doesn't work. But it does work. Everybody has access to health care. They have a much higher standard of health care. The only difference is that the wealthy super elite in this country can buy their way into the best health care in the world. But our health care is in crisis, and the solution is simple: single-payer universal health care. And sadly, Democrats and Republicans alike are fighting against it.
All right. Another issue that the corporate media likes to cover, at least in this current campaign a bit, but never seems to go into too much depth on, is taxes. What would you propose for taxation?
Mike, pretty easy. Let's go back to a genuine progressive tax system so that the super rich pay their fair share. And if we did that, we would be able to provide tax relief to middle class and working and poor Americans. And on top of taxing the super rich, and let's say that one more time just because it feels so good to say it, tax the super rich. We're talking about people who make $250,000 to $500,000 a year ought to be paying a much higher percentage of that income in taxes. They should pay their fair share. The other thing that we should do is to cut the bloated military budget by about $100 billion. There's plenty of money available in this, the richest country in the world, to handle all of the social programs that we're describing and have the strongest, most powerful defensive military in the world. We need to move towards a genuine progressive tax system the way we once had in this country. And it's interesting that after Reagan dismantled the progressive tax system, and then, of course, Bill Clinton made it even worse, and now George W. Bush is making it still worse, we see the income disparity and the wealth gap widening higher and higher and higher. It has never been this high since the robber baron age, you know, just before the Great Depression. Something to think about. The Green Party has a plan for this. Check us out on the web at www.votecobb.org, and you will see that we have plans, solutions to all of the problems that face us, including the crisis that we're facing with these budget deficits. And the solution is simple: tax the super rich, cut the bloated military budget.
How are we going to open up our elections to make them more accessible to third parties like the Green Party?
Well, you know, Mike, it's not just making it accessible to third parties like the Green Party. It is also we need to make our government and our elections more responsive, make people feel like their voices matter. We need to make sure that every vote actually not only counts but gets counted. You know, we need to move towards multi-party democracy in this country, which would move in the direction of a genuinely pluralistic society. The first step, though, is to grapple with a current voting system where people feel like they have to vote against what they hate rather than for what they want. It's really quite undemocratic, the voting system in this country. And underlying this is the dreaded S word, spoiling. People constantly accuse the Greens of spoiling. And I want to address that head on, Mike, because what other people call spoiling, Greens call participating. We are going to exercise our democratic right to participate in elections. And if anybody believes that our participation is really causing a problem, then the solution to the problem really can't be to try to squelch the Green Party voice or restrict voter choice from the Green Party. We desperately need more voices, and voters deserve more choices. The solution is to change the voting system. And the solution is simple: instant runoff voting. Instant runoff voting is a preferential voting system that's used throughout the world: Australia, New Zealand, Ireland, London. It's a voting system used in Cambridge, Massachusetts, and it will be used in San Francisco, California. Voters are voting for it across the country this year. And it's very simple. It allows voters to rank order their preferences by saying, my first choice, my second choice, my third choice. We like to say that instant runoff voting is as easy as 1, 2, 3, because that's all the voter has to know is first choice, second choice, third choice. And then counting the ballots is equally easy. You just say, did anybody get a majority here of the first preference votes? Because any candidate who gets a majority of first preference votes is the winner, which is fine because they've won the majority. But if nobody gets a majority, then you eliminate the lowest vote getter because she or he can't win. Under instant runoff voting, people who voted for that eliminated candidate didn't waste their votes. Why? Because they've already indicated their runoff preference or their second choice preference on the ballot. So you transfer those second choices to the remaining candidates and now say, now do we have a majority? Go through the process until you have a majority winner. And you know, Mike, I told you it's used all over the country and all over the world, but this is also the voting system that's used for college football to select the Heisman Trophy. It's what Major League Baseball uses for the most valuable player. The Academy Awards uses a preferential voting system. And the Utah Republican Party is now using instant runoff voting, demonstrating that this is not some left-wing idea. It's just a good voting system if you want to guarantee that whoever wins has majority support and get the result in just one election. And I want to point this out. Greens are accused of spoiling Democrat races. But libertarians are also accused of spoiling Republican races. And here in Washington State, former U.S. Senator Slade Gordon lost an election because of the participation of a Libertarian Party candidate who, quote, spoiled that election. Now, I'm not saying that the Republican should win or the Democrat should win or the Green should win or the Libertarian should win. I'm saying an instant runoff voting will guarantee that whoever wins has the majority support of the voters. That's a better voting system. In addition, what you'll see is more participation because people get excited and enthusiastic about their vote because their vote is more powerful and more meaningful. And instant runoff voting will also move in the direction of more policy-based discourse and debate and less mudslinging. Why? Because under instant runoff voting, a candidate does not want to personally insult their opponents because they want to get the second choice of the potential voters. And you can't do that if you're being ugly and mean-spirited and mudslinging. So you might have sharp differences of opinion around issues, but it'll be issue-based distinctions rather than personal politics the way we see now.
Well, we're just about out of time. What final thoughts would you like to leave our listeners with?
Well, Mike, I guess it's this. The Green Party is growing. In 1996, there were only 10 organized state Green parties in this country. Only 5 of them had a guaranteed ballot line, and there were 40 elected Green office holders across the entire country. In 2000, the Green Party had grown to 21 organized state Green parties. 10 of those states had a guaranteed ballot line, and we had then had 87 elected Green office holders. And of course, in 2000, we know that Al Gore won the election, George Bush stole it, and Al Gore and the Democratic Party leadership, rather than fighting to secure the election they won, spent the entire time accusing the Green Party of being spoilers and trying to destroy the Green Party. And in that context and in that environment, the Green Party continued to grow to the point that today we have 44 organized state Green parties. 23 of those states started this election with a guaranteed ballot line, and there are right now 207 elected Green office holders across this country. So by every objective, concrete measurement, the Green Party is getting larger, stronger, and better organized. And remember this, listeners, that systemic social change has always come from third parties. So if you want to live in a society that will end war as foreign policy, live in a society that will dismantle this military-industrial complex that's driving not only wars throughout the world, but is also taking billions of our tax dollars to channel it into corporate profits. If you want to wean our society off of an addiction to oil that's causing war and global warming, if you want universal health care, if you want to raise the minimum wage to a living wage, if you want to end corporate personhood and corporate control of our government, you got to be willing to vote for the only candidates who are running on that agenda. And that party is the Green Party. And I'm David Cobb. I'm the Green Party's candidate for President of the United States. Check me out on the web, www.votecobb.org.
All right. Well, thank you for spending time with us today. We've just been talking with Green Party U.S. presidential candidate David Cobb, and you can find out more about his campaign at votecobb.org.